The Bostonians by Henry James. Olive will come down in about 10 minutes. She told me to tell you that. About 10. Neither 5 nor 15. And yet not 10 exactly, but either 9 or 11. Well, I am very glad to see you, at any rate. These words were spoken with much volubility by a smiling woman who entered a narrow drawing-room in which a visitor was absorbed in a book. The gentleman threw it down at the approach of Mrs. Luna, laughed, and shook hands with her. Mrs. Luna glanced at him from head to foot and gave a little smiling sigh. Basil Ransom was tall and lean and dressed throughout in black. He came from Mississippi, and he spoke very perceptibly with the accent of that country. Mrs. Luna assured him that her sister quite expected him and would feel as sorry as she could ever feel for anything if he didn't stay to dinner. Olive was going somewhere after dinner, but he mustn't mind that. Perhaps he would like to go with her. It wasn't a party. Olive didn't go to parties. It was one of those weird meetings she was so fond of.
"What kind of meetings?" the young man inquired. "You speak as if it were a rendezvous of witches."
"Well, so it is. They are all witches and wizards, mediums and spirit-rappers and roaring radicals." Basil Ransom stared.
"Do you mean to say your sister's a roaring radical?"
"A radical? She's a female Jacobin. She's a nihilist. Whatever is wrong. And all that sort of thing. If you are going to dine with her, you had better know it." He looked at Mrs. Luna with intelligent incredulity.
"Well, I suppose I might have known that," he continued at last.
"You might have known what?"
"Well, that Miss Chancellor would be all that you say. She was brought up in the City of Reform."
"Oh, it isn't the city. It's just Olive Chancellor. She would reform the solar system if she could get hold of it. She'll reform you if you don't look out. That's the way I found her when I returned from Europe."
"Have you been in Europe?" Ransom asked.
Mrs. Luna explained that she had been living in Europe for several years, ever since her husband died, but had come home a month before and was paying a visit to her sister. Mrs. Luna added that now she was back, she didn't know what she should do. Olive didn't want her in Boston and didn't go through the form of saying so. That was one comfort with Olive. She never went through any forms. Basil Ransom had got up just as Mrs. Luna made this last declaration, for a young lady had glided into the room, who stopped short as it fell upon her ears.
"If that were true," she said, "I shouldn't tell you that I am very sorry to have kept you waiting."
Her voice was low and agreeable, a cultivated voice, and she extended a slender white hand to her sister. Mrs. Luna explained to her sister that her freedom of speech was caused by his being a relation, though indeed he didn't seem to know much about them. She must be off to her dinner now. She saw the carriage was there, and in her absence Olive might give him any version of her she chose. "I have told him you are a radical, and you may tell him, if you like, that I am a painted Jezebel. Try to reform him. A person from Mississippi is sure to be all wrong. Goodbye, Mr. Ransom. I hope you are going to stay a little, so that you may judge us for yourself. You only stay tomorrow? Well, mind you come and see me in New York. Don't come out. My sister has the first claim. Olive, why don't you take him to your female convention?"
Mrs. Luna's familiarity extended even to her sister.
"I am glad I haven't opinions that prevent my dressing in the evening," she declared from the doorway. "The amount of thought they give to their clothing, the people who are afraid of looking frivolous."
Miss Chancellor was habited in a plain, dark dress, without any ornaments. Even after her sister had passed out of the room, she sat there with her eyes turned away, as if there had been a spell upon her. Miss Olive Chancellor was subject to fits of tragic shyness, and one of these fits had suddenly seized her now. Basil Ransom was a young man of first-rate intelligence. He was on his guard against generalizations which might be hasty, but he had arrived at two or three that were of value to a gentleman lately admitted to the New York bar and looking out for clients. One of them was that the simplest division it was possible to make of the human race is into the people who take things hard and the people who take them easy. He perceived very quickly that Miss Chancellor belonged to the former class. He broke the silence ensuing upon Mrs. Luna's departure by one of the courteous speeches to which blighted regions may still encourage a tendency, and the effect of his tone was to dispel her shyness. She had no difficulty in asking him now whether he would not stay to dinner. It was the same sort of impulse that had moved her to write to Basil Ransom after hearing that he had come to the North. Their cousinship, that of Chancellor's and Ransom's, was not very close. It was the kind of thing that one might take up or leave alone as one pleased. But it was her nature to look out for duties, to appeal to her conscience for tasks. His family was ruined. They had lost their slaves, their property, their friends and relations, their home. He had tasted the cruelty of defeat. What was sufficient for Olive was that he had rallied, admitted that North and South were a single, indivisible political organism. Olive had a fear of everything, but her greatest fear was of being afraid. She wished immensely to be generous, and how could one be generous unless one ran a risk? He had now come, and even this did not make Miss Chancellor feel that she had courted danger. She saw that he was too simple, too Mississippian, and she was almost disappointed. Of all things in the world, contention was most sweet to her, and it was very possible Basil Ransom would not care to contend. Nothing could be more displeasing than this indifference when people didn't agree with you. If she had supposed he would agree, she would not have written to him. When he had told her that he should be very happy to dine with her, she excused herself a moment and went to give an order in the dining room. The young man, left alone, looked about the parlor. He knew very little about Miss Chancellor. He had come to see her only because she wrote to him. He could only guess that she was quite a rich young woman. Such a house, inhabited in such a way by a quiet spinster, implied a considerable income. But afterwards, when his cousin had come back and they had gone down to dinner together, it was very easy for him to remark to himself that nothing would induce him to make love to such a type as this. Basil Ransom perceived that Miss Chancellor was a spinster. She was so essentially a celibate that Ransom found himself thinking of her as old, though when he came to look at her, it was apparent that her years were fewer than his own. She smiled constantly at her guest, but from the beginning to the end of the dinner, though he made several remarks that he thought might prove amusing, she never once laughed. As they drew to the close of the meal, she said that she should have to leave him after dinner, unless perhaps he should be inclined to accompany her. She was going to a small gathering at the house of a friend. "Oh, thank you," said Basil Ransom. "Is it a party? I haven't been to a party since Mississippi seceded."
"No, Miss Birdseye doesn't give parties. She's an ascetic."
"Oh, well, we have had our dinner," Ransom rejoined, laughing.
His hostess sat silent a moment.
"I think it might interest you," she remarked presently. "You will hear some discussion, if you are fond of that. Perhaps you wouldn't agree," she added, resting her strange eyes on him.
"Is it something very Bostonian? I should like to see that," said Basil Ransom.
"There are movements in other cities. Mrs. Farrinder goes everywhere. She may speak tonight."
"Mrs. Farrinder? The celebrated—"
"Yes, the celebrated. the great apostle of the emancipation of women. She is a great friend of Miss Birdseye.
And who is Miss Birdseye?
She is one of our celebrities. She is the woman in the world, I suppose, who has labored most for every wise reform. But if you are not in sympathy, perhaps you had better not come, she went on.
In sympathy with what, dear madam? Basil Ransom asked. If, as you say, there is to be a discussion, there will be different sides, and of course one can't sympathize with both.
Yes, but everyone will, in his way, or in her way, plead the cause of the new truths. If you don't care for them, you won't go with us.
I tell you, I haven't the least idea what they are. But do take me. It's such a chance to see Boston.
It isn't Boston. It's humanity.
Miss Chancellor, as she made this remark, rose from her chair, and her movement seemed to say that she consented. But before she quitted her kinsman to get ready, she observed to him that she was sure he knew what she meant. He was only pretending he didn't.
"Well, perhaps, after all, I have a general idea," he confessed.
She lingered an instant with her anxious face. "Mrs. Farrander will fix it," she said, and she went to prepare herself.
Miss Birdseye received Miss Chancellor in the hall of the mansion. She was a little old lady with an enormous head. That was the first thing Ransom noticed. She wore a loose black jacket with deep pockets, which were stuffed with papers, memoranda of voluminous correspondence. And the brevity of this simple garment was the one device by which Miss Birdseye managed to suggest that she was a woman of business, that she wished to be free for action. By 9 o'clock, 20 other persons had arrived and had placed themselves in the chairs that were ranged along the sides of a long room. Basil Ransom wondered who they all were. He had a general idea they were mediums, communists, vegetarians. Miss Birdseye made her way to Miss Chancellor. Her transit, however, was checked by the arrival of fresh pilgrims. The people who had just come in were Dr. Selah Tarrant and Mrs. Tarrant, and their daughter Verena, who was very pretty. By this time, a certain agitation was perceptible. When pressed on the subject of the general expectation, Mrs. Farrander said that she could only deliver her message to an audience which she felt to be partially hostile.
"I don't require sympathy," she said, with a tranquil smile, to Olive Chancellor. "I am only myself. I only rise to the occasion when I see prejudice massed before me like an army."
"Well, I don't know. I guess we are all solid here," Selah Tarrant said, looking round him with a slow, deliberate smile, which showed a set of big, even, carnivorous teeth.
"Selah," said his wife, laying her hand on the sleeve of his waterproof, "I wonder whether Miss Birdseye would be interested to hear Verena."
And putting up a half-gloved, familiar hand, she drew Miss Birdseye down to her, and the pair explained what it was their child could do.
"Who is that charming creature?"
Basil Ransom heard his cousin ask, in a grave, lowered tone, of a young man whose hair was prematurely white.
"The daughter of Dr. Tarrant, the mesmeric healer, Miss Verena. She's a high-class speaker," he replied.
"What do you mean?" Olive asked. "Does she give public addresses?"
"Oh, yes. She has had quite a career in the West. I heard her last spring at Topeka. They call it inspirational. I don't know what it is, only it's exquisite, so fresh and poetical. She has to have her father to start her up. It seems to pass into her."